From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, a vaccine is coming. What states and you can do to prevent voter fraud and the DNC convention. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. Earlier this week, Russia announced that they were nearly done with trials of a coronavirus vaccine, but some questioned the authenticity of the announcement. To better understand the process of making a viable vaccine and getting it to market, FRC President Tony Perkins invited Dr. Robert Redfield to join him for a conversation on Tuesday. Dr. Redfield is the director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Dr. Redfield, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Tony. Glad to be here.
So does Russia have something, or do we know?
Well, I think Russia has a vaccine that they're in development, similar to we have a number of vaccines in advanced development right now, six of which the U.S. has invested in moving forward. Two of which are now in phase three trials, when we anticipate hopefully they'll have their safety and immunogenicity data available by the end of October, early November, so one can determine whether, first and foremost, they're safe and efficacious. And then there's actually four other vaccines that we anticipate will be getting into phase three trials in September, October. I've been in vaccine development, Tony, most of my life. I've never seen a more purposeful, definitive, laser-focused program than Operation Warp Speed. The president made very clear that there was a clear mission, which was to develop a vaccine before January 2021, and that's the critical path. And as we went through over 100 vaccines, we looked through the ones that we believe that could meet that assignment, which is to be ready for distribution to the American public. And as I say, we have six vaccines now that are in that final focus group, of two of which are in phase three trials. Russia, has their vaccine that they've done with their phase one, phase two trials, but obviously they haven't completed the definitive safety and efficacy studies. When they decide to deploy it is obviously going to be their decision. The United States is going to ensure that these vaccines are safe and efficacious prior to deploying them to the American public. But what's unique about Operation Warp Speed, and the reason why it's moving so quickly, is we have made the decision to invest in those vaccines, actually purchase those vaccines, allow manufacturing of those vaccines to begin as soon as the phase three trials have started. So those two vaccines in phase three trials now, those vaccines are in production, and if they turn out to be safe and efficacious, we'll be able to distribute them, and really at the same time that the FDA approves them, where in the normal process would be, that's when you would start the production for manufacturing. So that we're taking that financial risk to try to accelerate the availability of these vaccines for the American public.
So Operation Warp Speed will meet its objectives, in your mind?
I think so, sir. I think it's, if you would ask me, back in April, I think all of us had a high degree of skepticism because we've been in this field for a long time. It's just complicated. But I will tell you, I have never seen a more purposeful focus on the mission at hand and not allowing decisions to be made that are tangential to the mission. We had a number of vaccines that really are good vaccines, but when we looked and evaluated them, they weren't going to be available. No way we could get to where they needed to get to be available by January 2021. So they weren't prioritized. I've seen this group has stayed mission focused.
It's leadership makes a big difference. And thank you for your leadership at the CDC. We're grateful for it and looking forward to that vaccine being widely available to folks all across this country. Dr. Robert Redfield, thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, thank you very much, Tony. Thank you. God bless you.
You can find out more about Dr. Redfield when you visit tonyperkins.com. Also, while you're there, consider donating to the Ministry of Family Research Council and help us fulfill our mission to be your voice in Washington, D.C. for biblical principles and impact even more lives with the truth. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com.
Are you looking to grow closer in your relationship with Jesus Christ and in your knowledge of God's Word? Family Research Council has a new three-part series titled Three Ways to Read the Bible. In this blog series, FRC's Director of Life, Culture, and Women's Advocacy, Petrina Mosley, shares helpful ways to be encouraged and guided by Scripture. There's no better time than now to get to know God through His Word and learning what He says about humanity and life itself. To learn more, visit FRCblog.com.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. There's been a lot in the news lately about states wanting to go to all mail-in ballots for the November election. But with voter rolls rife with ineligible voters, it's hard to see a good path forward on the issue in such a short time. One of the states successfully combating voter fraud is Texas, and joining Tony to talk about their efforts is the Attorney General of the state of Texas, Ken Paxton.
Ken, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Tony. Appreciate it.
All right, first, just explain to our listeners what was at issue in Texas and what you did.
So we have a pretty simple law in Texas passed by the Texas legislature. It tries to balance this idea of the fact that we have much higher voter fraud in mail-in ballots, and I have proof of that just because we prosecute election fraud, and two-thirds of our cases over the last 10 years have been mail-in ballot cases. So the legislature has allowed people to vote by mail if they're disabled, physically disabled. They're going to be out of town during the election. If they are in prison, but they're not a felon. And so I think the idea here is they want to provide legitimate voting for people, and they also let people who are over 65 do it. Legitimate reasons for voting by mail, but not open it up so much because, again, the risk is high. So we were sued twice, once in state court in Travis County, which is where Austin is. We lost there, of course. And then we also were sued in federal court in San Antonio. We lost there. Obviously, we didn't pick the venues. Others did. The Fifth Circuit took our case, put a stay on it. And right now we're waiting to argue the merits in the Fifth Circuit. But we've got it at least stopped for the time being. I think we've got a pretty good chance of winning. I'm almost certain we're going to win. And then the state case was a little more tricky because what they both judges had ordered was that mail-in ballots be sent out. Well, we were running out of time, and even though we thought we'd be successful on the merits when we got to the Texas Supreme Court, we were concerned that we wouldn't get there in time, be too late, and the elections would be lost. So we had a court of appeals that was pretty liberal, and it seemed like things were going relatively slow. We weren't going to make it up. So we ended up using a procedure that we know has only been used like once. We found it in the election code where we mandamus the district clerks that were doing this in Travis County and Harris County and Dallas County, some of the bigger, more liberal counties. And we appealed directly. We mandamus directly to the Texas Supreme Court. We were successful 9-0 stopping the mail-in ballots from being sent out to everybody.
General, you made reference to at the start of this that your department enforces the laws that pertain to elections and you investigate election fraud. And I've looked at the record and there are quite a few cases in Texas that have to do with mail-in ballots that were used fraudulently. So this is not hypothetical. This is real. This is a real problem that would be would become huge if every voter received a ballot in the mail.
Absolutely. And I get complaints from Democrats and Republicans. The Democrats typically don't want me to publicize the fact that they're calling me, but they do call me, worried about their own primaries and their own elections. And so it really is an issue for both sides. And when I was in the Texas House and we were trying to pass voter ID, the argument made by the Democrats was that we shouldn't focus on voter ID, which we ultimately passed. We should focus on mail-in ballots because that's where all the fraud is. They were the ones that said that, and now they're promoting it.
So what do you think, if they're successful, and I'm not just talking about Texas. I'm talking about, of course, obviously, Texas, a big state that, you know, is demographically is trending in some ways that could lend itself to a state that could go blue. But that beside the point, when you just look at the process nationwide, would this be of concern to you? I mean, if we went to this all mail-in balloting where people are getting these ballots, don't you think that's going to undermine people's confidence in the outcome of the election?
If it doesn't, it should. As I said, the Democrats acknowledged it during on the floor. It's documented. But, you know, this is a strategy. This is a strategy going not just in Texas. This is a national strategy by the Democratic Party to push mail-in ballots. And if you can see the results in California, there's just no way to a Republican can win statewide. And that's, you know, if you have unauthorized people voting and you can't prosecute it, you don't prosecute it, then you can't trust elections. And
right.
So we're going to have, right. If this continues, you know, I don't know how you win elections and know whether anything's credible anymore if you can't trust who's voting.
People lose confidence in the system, and that's the glue that keeps it all together, is the fact that we have trust, although it's shaken from time to time. But a all mail-in balloting, given the prevalence of fraud that we've seen just in isolated cases, I don't see how you could have confidence in the system.
Well, in some of these states, they're not defending this. They're making a huge mistake, because once it's in place, this is my concern. Once it's in place, it's like California.
Yeah.
How do you ever get it back? They just go out and figure out how many people they need to vote, and they get them.
I agree. That's the, you know, they're using the coronavirus. And we've talked about here on the program today how accommodations can be made within the current models, the systems, to, as you just pointed out at the beginning, those that are elderly. You know, we can expand the early voting or the absentee voting, but we don't need to send everybody who's on the rolls a ballot. That's just opening the election up to question, to compromise, to chaos. And quite frankly, I'm not sure, given what's happening right now in America, that we could sustain that.
Well, we can't. And what happens, what we've seen in Texas, is what the district clerks, when they're, you know, they notify their other party members, hey, we're mailing these ballots out this day and to this location, go grab them and vote for them. That's how this is done. And it's not hard to do. They just notify their other Democrats that they're out there, and they go harvest them. And that's our concern, that, you know, if that becomes the way it is, then we can't. There's no election that is trusted, whether
right.
you're a Democrat or a Republican.
All right. Attorney General Ken Paxton, I want to thank you for taking time to join us today, but also for being out there leading the way and defending the law and upholding the integrity of our voting system.
Well, thank you for having me on. It's certainly, I'm glad you're covering this today, because it's important that this occur not just in my state, protecting integrity of the elections, but in every state, because, you know, we're all in this together. And if other states are not trustworthy, it's going to affect all of us.
Absolutely, without question. Attorney General, thanks so much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You can find out more about Ken Paxton when you visit TonyPerkins.com. We'd also encourage you to help FRC continue to produce this radio program. Just visit TonyPerkins.com and click on the donate button. That's TonyPerkins.com.
Do Christians have a biblical obligation to participate in government? Do Christians have a duty to vote? And if so, what principles should inform them while casting their ballots? How should pastors think about politics? And how can they shepherd their congregations well during an election season? Family Research Council's new second edition of Biblical Principles for Political Engagement provides biblical wisdom and clear answers to these questions to help you navigate the political landscape this election year. To access this important resource, visit frc.org/engage.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. As we were talking about in our last segment, the move toward all mail-in voting is a hot topic, but demanding it and being able to actually do it legitimately are two completely different things. J. Christian Adams is the president and general counsel of Public Interest Legal Foundation, and he joined Tony on Wednesday to talk about what voters can do to ensure the integrity of their ballot this election cycle.
Christian, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
All right. I want to jump right into this one question of, you know, our role as voters. What can my listeners do? You know, we want to see lawmakers not change the laws and not, you know, use this pandemic to change the rules at the last minute. What can we do?
Well, probably there's two things. One is care and vote. And when you do decide to vote, the way to make sure that your vote is counted is to vote in person and to feed that ballot into the counting machine and make sure it gets counted. Because if you vote by mail, there's so many mail ballots every year that don't get accepted, that get lost by the post office, that are rejected for tiny defects. The way to make sure your vote counts is to vote in person.
Yeah, in fact, I mean, it's been documented. I think I've read this in your testimony before Congress that since 2012, there's been somewhere in the neighborhood of 28 million ballots unaccounted for.
That's right. They were mailed out to voters who were going to cast absentee ballots. They never came back and were counted. A lot of those were rejected. A lot of them got lost in the mail. A lot of them went to the wrong place. I had one critic who criticized our characteristic as missing as saying they aren't missing, they're in landfills. It's like, well, Jimmy Hoffa is not missing, he's just unaccounted for. They weren't counted. There are 28 million ballots in the last four federal elections.
And so if you want to make sure that your ballot counts, the best thing to do is if you want to stay away from the crowds, early vote, or you know, turn that ballot in yourself. Don't let someone else take it for you and make sure that chain of custody is maintained.
Right. And get it into the counting machine. If you feel better having lots of hand sanitizer and a mask, even if you want to have goggles, wear them, because your vote is important and voting by mail is not a guarantee that your vote will be counted.
Yeah. So the best thing to do in this election is every election is important, but I mean, this is going to be so close. Every vote counts. People need to vote. And so as Christian was saying, if you got to put on the goggles, the gloves, you know, I don't know, hazmat suit, whatever is required, go to the polls and vote. But there's more that we can do to protect the integrity of the system as voters, as citizens.
There is. I will tell you that there's a shortage every year of good people working as poll officials. You're essentially a government official running the election. And I will tell you that a lot of organizations focus on filling these roles up, these jobs up, with people who might be willing to, shall we say, bend the rules. And it's very, very important that people who care about clean elections volunteer to be poll officials. I guarantee, and plus a lot of times you get paid. I guarantee in your local hometown that they have a need for people to volunteer as poll officials.
Yeah.
I know it's not a lot of fun, but it's really important.
It is, especially, again, I go back to this election, how divided the nation is and what is at stake in this election. We need to be voting and we need to be taking what steps we can to protect the integrity of our system. Christian, is it also beneficial for folks to, be talking about this topic on social media and maybe even in that antiquated model of writing letters to the editor and letting people know that, look, we can't allow our system to be hijacked by those that have ulterior motives, that, yes, there might be concerns about the coronavirus, but there's ways to still vote and vote safely and ensure the integrity of the system.
Boy, you cannot understate how important that is. Everybody that I know has strong beliefs, but not everybody wants to share them. And I will tell you that, and I hate to draw lines of demarcation, but the folks who would let the vulnerabilities thrive in our system are very vocal, are very active on social media, are very much in your face evangelizing. It's their version of evangelization.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't doubt that. And they're out there evangelizing.
Christian Adams, thanks so much for joining us today and appreciate all the work over there at the Public Interest Legal Foundation.
Thank you so much for having me.
You can find out more about Christian Adams when you visit tonyperkins.com. We'd also invite you to help FRC continue to produce this radio program. just visit TonyPerkins.com and click on the donate button. That's TonyPerkins.com.
News stories about the assaults in Nigeria are rarely reported by the media. But in recent years, persecution of Christians in Nigeria has persistently increased. A July 15, 2020 headline reports that over 1,000 Nigerian Christians were killed in the first 6 months of 2020. This is in addition to 11,000 Christians who have been killed since June 2015. For more info, read FRC's latest publication, The Crisis of Christian Persecution in Nigeria, at frc.org/Nigeria.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. The Democrat National Committee held their convention this past week, and while many of you probably ignored it, Tony Perkins and the team at FRC did not. On Thursday, Tony invited Jennifer Harper, columnist for the Washington Times, to join him for a discussion on the convention.
Jennifer, welcome to Washington Watch.
It's good to be with you, Tony.
So, Jennifer, am I on target that the focal point has been less about policies and more personality in terms of heaping condemnation upon Donald Trump?
Oh, absolutely. And I think certainly the Democratic Party has lost their prime directive here, which is to reach voters, to inspire them, to get them excited about getting to the polls. And certainly, if you look at some of the reviews of this event, all three nights so far have been described as an infomercial, as a droning, repetitive type of prepackaged material. And, of course, they're missing their live audiences, and that certainly plays a factor. But as you mentioned before, a lot of the best Democratic messages, such as being a party of the people or being there for you, all that visceral type of things that Democrats have talked about for years, was definitely missing. And also, Tony, very more importantly, the actual ratings of the event itself in terms of how many people are watching this have gone down. They dropped by 48%. After the first night and 27% after the second night. This is according to Nielsen. And certainly they're getting a lot of play on all of the cable and broadcast news networks. So it looks kind of like, you're right, the Democrats are sort of losing their focus here.
Jennifer, let me ask you a question, because I know some have said, look, they're doing nothing to appeal to the undecided voters. This is, it's basically red meat for their base attacking Donald Trump. But, you know, I actually think that's one thing that Barack Obama got right. He ran base elections. He knew that he needed his base to turn out to win. And especially in a cycle such as this, where you've got the factors of the coronavirus and who's going to show up to vote and how are they going to vote all up in the air, is this election more of a base election where the messaging is targeted more to the supporters?
Well, I certainly think every vote's going to count here. And there are a lot of efforts that are out there to motivate voters and to certainly reach into all of those special interest pockets of voters that are out there. And right now, I certainly think that the Trump effort is going a lot better than the Democrats' effort, because certainly a lot of the press coverage has indicated that the Democrats are leaning so far left to the progressive side of things, and a lot of time the emphasis, their public emphasis, is also leaning that way. And there's been a lot of theories as to why are they doing this? Why are they not reaching out to middle America and to grassroots America and all of those wonderful things that make up this nation? And some people are saying it's because they're trying to bring attention off of Joe Biden and more on to the Bernie Sanders region of the Democratic Party. So, again, I think you're definitely right in terms of them forgetting about the independent or the undecided voters.
So there's, in some ways, that division, almost civil war within the Democratic Party, is still going on beneath the surface, even though they're unified in their hatred of Donald Trump. They still cannot come together over their policy goals and objectives. Is that why they're not talking so much about them?
Well, I think that's a valid point there, Tony. It's very, very well put on your part. To try to encapsulate what they're trying to get across here on a national scale like this has always been a challenge to any of the previous conventions. But I think because of the production of the four nights of this convention, it's been so complicated with lots of fancy graphics, lots of Zoom appearances and so forth, that the message truly has gotten lost. And that's a dangerous way to be. And from what I can tell from the Trump plans for the convention plans for next week, they're definitely going in a different direction.
You know, I've had the I had to force myself to read the Democratic Party platform. And, mm-hmm. you know, this was a compromise product. It was something that Bernie Sanders, this is what brought him together with Joe Biden, and many of Bernie's people wrote the platform. And if you look through the platform, to me, it's why they're not talking about it. It is one of the most radical documents I have seen that talks about everything that's bad with America and really no solutions in terms of, unless you want to call creating more government and, you know, and enabling unions to solve every problem in America, there are no solutions contained in their platform.
That's right. And essentially, that is what Americans are looking for right now. As you mentioned previously, they're alarmed by the pandemic. They're alarmed by their bank accounts, whether they're working or not, et cetera, et cetera. The Trump White House has certainly come up with a lot of very viable solutions to those things on the fly. I mean, everybody's concerned about this. And now should certainly be the time to really drill down and find those messages that react on a visceral level with all Americans. And I have to tell you also, Julie, there's a great new poll out actually today from Rasmussen Reports, which talks about the effect of national political conventions on typical voters. And you got to think about Much Ado About Nothing, because the poll reveals that the vast majority here in this poll, 74%, say they are not being swayed by these conventions. And in my opinion, I think this could play into Donald Trump's hand, because he really is a master of public appearances. He's got a sense of showmanship. He certainly is a master of the media based on his experiences from past year. So that's kind of the climate out there among the voters.
Well, I'm actually grateful for the conventions, because it gives us something to talk about. Maybe the voters aren't paying attention, but we're talking about it.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.